Welcome to the Hotel Calcified podcast, part three of the Chiefs of Complaint. And we've had two very entertaining and enlightening discussions regarding how to assess the patient's chief complaint and diagnostically how we can affirm and confirm the chief complaint. And in the part two at the end, Dr. Franzen was discussing how he pulp tests in terms of ruling out teeth. And Dr. Shackleton was chomping at the bit, itching to respond. And Tom, how are you tonight? And what are your thoughts on Joel's pulp testing regimen?
I'm great. And, I really largely agree with it. I think it makes sense. It actually brought up a point that I was going to ask about earlier when you have your team do the cold testing. And when that person comes in and they say, because we see people who have cold sensitivity, and the last thing they want, we say, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to do a little cold test for you. And they start haggling and negotiating. And so, I mean, does your team? So how do you have, they've been to their dentist, they've cold tested, your team's cold tested. Now you're going to come in and cold test. I don't know how that goes over with the patients if they get cold tested to death. And, most of our patients get kind of cranky with cold testing, and maybe I need to have a lighter touch or something. So I don't know how to navigate that. So I guess that's
Well,
my first question.
yeah, my staff have a get out of jail free. They get pushback from the patient. Boom, no problem. They just stop,
Okay.
and you got to take it over. So my assistant Marie, she's great. She walks in, she goes, "It's one of them." I'm like, "I know it. It's one of them, or one of those. It's one of those." I'm like, "Oh, it's one of those."
We all
Okay,
need a safe word.
that's all I know. It's one of those. So then you come in and sometimes they're just anxious and they just don't, they want to see the dude, right? And okay, the dude's coming in, here's the dude, and I'll do my dude stuff. And so sometimes it could be sexist or whatever it may be, or just the way they're coping. They hammer the assistants hard, and then you come in and they love you and you're like, okay. Or they're still not happy. But yeah, so they get out of jail free, and so yeah. They never feel stressed that they have to do the exam. They get any EBGBs. Well, that's useful information for me. And then I come in and work it. And sometimes I do the cold test at the very end. I do everything but it, the cold test, right? And then
Cold is usually my last thing. It's the last thing I do because for somebody whose their chief complaint is cold. Now, the person who's trying to haggle and negotiate and don't touch my tooth and blah blah blah, blah, I'll do everything I can to kind of cajole them into it and say, look, I just really, I'm just curious, and I won't go crazy. I'm not gonna, go nuts. But I have had patients who just utterly refused. They said, you cannot touch that particular tooth with cold. And but I'm like you, I'll say, okay, I will touch every other tooth, and I have to tell you that I can't really give you a firm diagnosis. I'm basing this on what you're telling me. And so, and I said, and not that I don't believe you, but I sort of joke, I'll say, not that I don't believe you, but I kind of don't believe you. So I'm just going to tell you that this is, I'll feel that out, right? It's some people I'm not going to use that joke with because the Dear Dental Association, Dr. Shackleton's a jackass. So I have had those situations where I just won't do it. And I tell them this is my tentative diagnosis and I'm hoping for the best and everything, I guess aligns and all the stars do align. And so, I guess we'll treat that pulpitis, but, I'll try to do everything I can to get something, some kind of cold or something, even if I just sort of like just barely give it a brush. But yeah, it's those are hard. Those are hard cases where people basically won't let you do your job.
Yeah, and if they let you test the other teeth, then you're building a relationship, and you've listened to them, and you've accommodated them. They tend to warm up after a period of time. But if you don't accommodate them, and you're like, "This is the way we process every patient. That's the way every exam goes. I do the cold. Shut up and put up." It's like, no, 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 no. You accommodate them, you work with them, and then they warm up too.
Let me just try the other tooth. Let me just, so let me
Yeah.
just, I'm going to touch it. It's way over here. It's nowhere
Yeah.
near it. and see how it goes. And then, okay, that wasn't so bad. You know, it kind of a light touch. Yeah, you're right. There are times when they will kind of come around and say, well, okay, do you really need to touch it? And I'll say, I'll just super quickly. I just want to be sure, you know, I just
best part of my day when you hurt. Come on. You're taking that away from me.
Yes. Yes.
You kind of joke with me. Like,
this is the little shop of horror.
Unless you're sore.
Yeah. You guys. I love to tell people about cold testing. I say, this is a bit of a crude test. It's sort of like testing the nerves in your leg by kicking you in the shins.
Yeah.
You know, if I kick you in the shins and you feel it, I'm not a nice guy, but your nerves are working. Hey, if I kick you in the shins and you don't feel it, you got bigger problems than me not being a nice guy. Yeah, your nerves aren't working. So you've got a problem there. So that seems to resonate with some folks.
You guys are just such warm human beings. I just don't do these things.
Canada, baby. I think maybe it's Canada. I don't know. I watch this. You guys know John Mulaney, comedian? John Mulaney?
No.
Yeah, come on. Anyway, he's a very funny guy. So he makes his comment. He's from Chicago, but he makes his comment about, you know, you could pour hot soup in my lap and I'll apologize to you. And I thought, because you're like a Canadian. That's like us, man. That's what we do.
Do you guys, okay, let's digress there just for a second. Do you both really think that the Canadian mentality let's keep it to the dental and not, we don't need to get into politics and stuff like that unless you want to. But do you really think that Canadian dental mentality is really any different than the average American?
Yeah, it's a bit different. Yeah, I definitely... It's more formal with the Americans. Like, I had a guy come up from Washington State, a young guy during COVID. It was right before COVID. And for whatever reason, he couldn't see an endodontist in Washington State. So he came up to see me. And I did my training in Texas, but it's been a few years. So I forgot. He's like, yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. No. And I'm like, in Canada, if you start saying sir to someone, it's almost like you're subterfuging them. Like,
yeah,
when I watch those cop shows in the States and the guy pulls someone over and they say, oh, I'm sorry, sir. If you're a Canadian cop, you're like, that guy's guilty as hell. No one says, sir.
Yeah, who's sir? Who the hell is? What? You start looking over your shoulder.
And I would be like with patients when I was in Texas, like, yes or no, sir. I'm like, I'm not being a jerk. Like, in my mind, I'm not being a jerk. I'm being nice. Why are you calling me sir? Like, it's an underhand insult in Canada to call someone sir. Oh, you're being formal now. Like, yeah. And so you kind of get away with that. So I definitely found that in the States, people are much more yes sir, no sir. And you're like, oh my goodness, come on. Yeah. Fixing teeth.
It's hard to generalize because
I
would say in the state of Oregon, having worked here quite a bit, there's not a lot of yes sir, no sir going on. Up in Alaska, it's a little different. And for different reasons, but I think
rural America, I think, is more yes or no sir. And downtown Seattle, I'm sure they're not calling the guy sir.
No. Don't get me started. I just spent the weekend in Chicago, and my daughter just bought a house there, I won't digress off the dental subject, but I think it's so hard to generalize about what Canada is, what America is, because I think it really depends on where you are, your economics. There's so many religion. There's so many different factors that will define your experience of what America is, rural versus metro area. So it's tough. It's really tough.
It's like many countries in one country. It's remarkably different in different regions of the U.S.
And Canada
and the rest of the world looks at the U.S. and like they just paint it over as, you know, it's one thing. And you're like, no, there's completely different. You take someone from downtown Miami and you stick in the middle of Omaha.
Yeah,
almost like on a different planet.
we have a lot of superficial politeness for sure.
Yeah,
but we have some smoldering rage, not too far from the surface. I think we're quite happy to get cranky. Just like if you call me sir too many times, it's sort of like WTF. What's that all about?
Yeah,
I don't. It's funny because I don't know. I've had too many people call me sir. Maybe because I'm surly. Actually, That is absolutely not true. I just actually what I do, and I'm sorry, I will keep this short and sweet. I really customize my, I tick all the boxes, but I really customize my personality to the patient. You know, if somebody's really anxious, we're gonna focus on comfort. If somebody's analytical, we're gonna focus on facts. If they're, you know, it depends on what they need out of me. And I think the one thing I haven't said, which might be beneficial to the conversation, is that I never go into that room expecting to treat anybody. I never go in the room needing the money. I never worry about the production. I'm not concerned. And I just very clearly tell people, and I'll say this sometimes within 30 seconds of meeting them because I can see they're anxious. Let me assure you, no one is trying to sell you a root canal today. We just want to tell you what's going on. It is totally up to you. We'll do what you want to do. And it is just amazing. I can just watch people relax. And it's not a selling technique. I really mean it. I mean, I'm coughing in the other room. I got a million things to do, you know, and it's like,
candy won't crush itself.
No. So anyway, I mean, that's been a blessing because when I embraced that mentality, it was a big stress reduction on me. And again, without getting way off track, I think one thing we'll talk about in a future podcast is that sometimes the best treatment you ever did is the one you never did.
Well, absolutely. Yep. That brings to mind two interesting cases. So I had this one young lady come in to see me, and her chief complaint was all over the map. And it was like up quadrant two, and then it was, you know, and then we ended up doing quadrant three. We were testing the teeth here, there, and nothing. And, you know, you're looking for reliability, right? And now once again, reliability, like she was responding vigorously to cold sometimes and not so much other times because it was deliberately tricking. She couldn't tell which tooth I was on. Right. When the patient says what tooth you're on, you're like, no. You don't want to, you know where I am. Right. And it turned out, you know, she had schizophrenia and she was having an episode and it was all about that. And there was her teeth were pristine. She had no fillings in any of them. And it took like almost like a perverse pleasure. Like, you actually don't need a root canal, you know. And isn't that great? Because if I did a root canal, you'd be coming in and then I could do a second root canal or I could do a third root canal or I could say the root's cracked and you go down that rabbit hole of more needles in the mouth and treatment and it's not the case.
Right.
Brings up a second case. So I had this one guy come in to see me in his upper premolar and, you know, the general dentist had done a root canal and the PDL wasn't particularly wide, but it was a missed palatal canal. And the guy's like, it's sore. And I tapped it. And so I'm like, okay, well, there's a missed canal and it's sore. So I retreated it. And he went away and came back for a bite adjustment, maybe came back for a second bite adjustment, which is pretty rare. So I'm like, well, that's a bit odd. And then he came back. It's still sore. So we did the cone beam. We did this. I'm like, it looks fine. He's like, no. It's really. And he was perhaps now too educated on what to say. So I ended up doing the surgery. And I had to drill through perfectly good bone to get to this perfectly good root. And I'm like, there's no tissue there for me to sample to send it up. I always do a sample when I do a surgery, send it back. And then the guy, you know, goes away, recovers from the surgery. And he comes back again. It's still sore. And I'm like, okay. And then I start talking. I'm like, yeah, I'm not able to sleep. It's getting me down. So I'm like, whoa, getting you down. Yeah, I'm not eating the same. And refer to the oral medicine specialist. The guy's depressed and he fixated on his tooth. So reel it back. I probably didn't even need to retreat it from the start. So a case like that, I keep in the back of my mind all the time now. It's like they can have a chief complaint, but is it actually, you know, what it is? And you learn by your mistakes. You know, those patients will come back a year later and it's not erysipelas. And then this guy, I end up doing a buckload of treatment. And then when I actually sat down and talked to him a little bit more, because like, man, I've thrown everything in the kitchen sink at it. And it actually looked good from the start. And I sent him the oral medicine guy and it was absolutely awesome. You know, the guy's totally fine now. And he's like, don't you ever need a root canal again, you come see me because now I know you, I'm on to you, you know, in a nice way.
Yeah. Tom, I've got a question for you, because we didn't do any, this is my responsibility, we didn't actually do a proper introduction of credentials, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about your oral pain residency and your training? And where I'd like to take this conversation a little bit is where the problem is non-odontogenic, but it could be sensed as an odontogenic issue. And then ask you kind of how much endodontics gets done where it's really not going to solve a problem, where we did an odontogenic endodontic procedure, you know, but it was never really indicated. So I know there's about three pieces of that, but if you could tell us a little bit about your background and on those two points, I'd be curious.
Sure. So I'm a general dentist and I have a practice that's limited to endodontics and oral medicine or facial pain. I did strictly endo for about a decade and I kept seeing patients kind of like this guy, you know, that Joel just talked about it. And I think that wanders into practices like that. And an opportunity came up to attend University of Southern California for 3 years and do kind of a hybrid master's degree in orofacial pain and oral medicine. So I did that and I cut down my clinic hours quite a bit and spent about 25 hours a week doing the oral medicine. And I'd have to go down to California quite a bit and do on-site things. And after 3 years, I finished that and I'm a diplomat of the American Board of Orofacial Pain and a fellow of the American Academy of Orofacial Pain. And so probably about 60% of my practice is still endodontics, because endodontics rocks, of course. Mm-hmm. But also I see some chronic pain patients, and not an unfrequent patient who will come into our practice is that person who has had multiple root canals, extractions, surgeries, and they just have ongoing pain. And so that is a very tricky scenario, because the question that's always asked is, well, did I need all of these root canals? And to that, I'm very cautious with my answer. I say, well, I can't say, because I don't know. I wasn't in the room when the diagnosis took place. And I say, but possibly, sure. Does that mean that the dentist who did it was wrong? No, because your symptoms were entirely consistent, I would say, from what you're telling me, that I try not even to have this conversation, but right. I'd say the symptoms will present exactly like somebody who needs a root canal. Right. Absolutely. As clinicians, this is where I would start asking myself a question. If somebody, because we see this, we tend to see, you know, we're speaking of neuropathy now, post-traumatic trigeminal neuropathy. We tend to see this in women more than men, probably roughly 3-1. Tends to be in the upper posterior. That's the most common place, but it can happen anywhere. So if we start seeing three quadrants with maybe a couple of occlusal fillings here and nothing here, and then maybe here, and then all of a sudden root canal extraction, I would start questioning, you know, our diagnosis, because they will present just like somebody who needs an endo, just like somebody who needs a retreat, just like somebody who needs surgery. I have called oral surgeons and said, please do not extract any more teeth on this patient, because it's not going to fix their problem. And the teeth sometimes don't get extracted and sometimes they do, but the pain persists. So this is probably one of the hardest things to try to identify and then to treat, because it's that root canal. It looks beautiful, looks perfect, right? Or there may even be an obvious flaw. And I think you see a whole untreated canal. Which one of us wouldn't treat that? As you're telling a story, I thought, well, I'd probably retreat it, you know? Yeah. And so I think, you know, asking those questions and digging a little bit deeper. And then when he said, you know, it's really kind of getting me down, and that catching your attention is great, because that would fly by a lot of people, quite frankly. So right. I think, but hearing that and hearing the patient, and I think those are the things we really have to be listening for, is having them tell us what their diagnosis is. So often they do. And I think, you know, just having some tools in your kit to try to differentiate that. And there's lots of things we can talk about another day about how to try to identify that. Is it truly neuropathic, or is it related to depression? Or could it be a tendonitis, you know, your masseter tendons inserted right above those teeth? And we'll see people with that kind of thing. They have so much pain. And then you poke that masseter tendon, and they jump out of the chair. They're like, oh my God, this is killing me. Meanwhile, they've had a couple of root canals, maybe an extraction. So I would never, ever criticize a colleague for doing a root canal on somebody who presented exactly like somebody who needs a root canal or an extraction or surgery or anything like that. Because I find myself, you know, the problem with having that little bit of extra training is I question myself all the time. You know, does this person really need a root canal? You know, oh gee, they had a root canal on that second molar. Now the first molar's having trouble. Does it really need it? You know, yeah. It's always easier when there's a great big lesion there and a sinus tract and it's all great. Yeah, great, perfect. That makes our decision-making process. But when it's a little more subtle, like you said, I think the great comment is some of the best work is the stuff we don't do. And unless we're really, really convinced that something needs treatment, then, you know, it's okay to just step back and say, I think maybe we'll monitor this. I'm not sure this needs a root canal, or send it to a colleague and just say, I got to get another opinion because I am just not sure. You know, and maybe they think you're a booby or something like that. And I'm fine with feeling that way. That's the treat of having kids. You know, you live with that all the time. And I do sympathize and empathize with anyone who struggles with this, as we all do. Does this really need a root canal? And I have colleagues in town who I'm happy to get second opinions from. I'm happy to give other opinions for, because these pains can come from so many places. We see people who get referred to an endodontist in town, and actually the problem is they have a lock in their joint and it's so painful, but they feel it in their tooth, or it's muscle pain or something else. And I mean, it's often the neuropathies, which are difficult to identify and even sometimes tougher to manage, but